with Aaron Dowd.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
How are you?
I'm very well, Aaron. How are you doing today?
Doing wonderful. Just going to have to need you to talk for just a second because I forgot to hit the record button over in
your
chair.
I got the record going. We're good to go.
Oh,
well,
there you go.
So, hey, I'm on top of it.
You knew that I was going to mess that up.
I might not be there, but I'm still efficient. I'm still working here. So how are we doing? Now, you're going to have to bear with me. I'm in a business center of a hotel. It's not a studio, so we might have a little bit of an echo going on, but we're doing our best, all things considered, with the technology that we have nowadays, trying to sound as best as we can and have fun while we're doing it. And happy Friday, Aaron. Happy Friday.
Yeah, it is Friday. Thankfully, it's Friday. It's been a long week. I'm not used to having... See, you're used to having multiple children in the home. I'm not used to having multiple right. children in the home, so...
How is that going, by the way?
It's done.
We didn't get an update yesterday. It's done.
Yeah, yesterday was the last day of the golf camp, and they went back home. And actually, we have no children. Wyatt's with his dad this weekend. So it was like, oh. Why is it so quiet?
It's like a, I don't want to say a crash, but it's like, you know, you're going 100 miles per hour and then a sudden stop, right?
Yes.
It's almost overwhelming. Trust me, with multiple kids in the home, and if they go away to grandparents for the weekend or aunt and uncles at the crazy farm or wherever, and then me and Allie are just sitting home, like, looking at each other like, well, what do we do now? You know what I mean? Like, once we get caught up with everything, clean the house, take advantage of that, we're just sitting there looking at each other like, well, what do we do? I mean, it's an odd feeling, but... and then after about, oh, I don't know, and trust me, parents who know this, no, after about an hour or two of that, you go, I miss the kids. You kind of want them back.
Yeah, that's right. And I tell we did last night, go to sleep. Yeah. And then wake up.
That's what you do. Exactly. Like, oh. You say, what do? You go get a nap. Or you go to bed at a decent hour. Don't have to fight kids with washing hair and brushing teeth. Yeah.
All right, so tell us about yesterday. Canute Trojanettes, 8U team started off over in Stroud, red bracket action. Tell us what happened.
Oh, it was I think we had a little nerves in us, Aaron. The girls came out, they got one run in the first inning, and typically with these girls, when in big game situations, and everybody sees this, baseball, softball, at every level, you get do one round of the lineup, and then once they see that second at bat, they loosen up and they start doing the stuff we've always practiced and we've always done. That wasn't really the case. They were topping the ball or fouling them off way ahead or way behind, real nervous. And it was 1-0 going into the fourth inning. We got a couple more runs put on, still 3-0. But if anyone who's followed 8U softball, you know, you can only score 6 runs in an inning. And every team, it seems like we're capable of doing that at any time. So 3-0 isn't enough. And but so credit our girls for playing really good defense. Kept the goose egg going and got to the fourth inning. Needed 4 runs to end it because, like I said, Purcell can only score 6. And it's 7-6. Doesn't matter. So we go up, have our best inning at the bat. Or at the plate, and got 4 runs in the 5th inning. Got to give a shout out to my Katie. She was the one who hit in the go ahead run to end the thing, and Canute wins it 7-0 over Purcell, and they move on to take on a Wynnewood. And trust me, all of us parents and coaches have tried to scout all these teams, and like we said earlier, we can't find anything about them, so we have no clue what Wynnewood's about, but it doesn't matter because all these teams are really good if they're at the state tournament. And we're having a lot of fun. So the girls took care of business yesterday. We had a strict no swim rule last night. I think we broke a lot of hearts. But we told them, we play at 1 o'clock today. We said, you get this done today, you're going to have all afternoon to go swim. And you can relax a little bit. You can have some, we can enjoy this trip then. And we could be in a really good position to possibly get into that championship series on Sunday. And Aaron, looking at it, I think the way these girls play and the way this bracket is lining up, I think there's a real good opportunity of that happening. So it's very exciting. We're having a good time here at Stroud.
So you guys are in the bottom of the bracket as far as the red bracket. Play Wynnewood tonight. If you win, like you said, 1 o'clock tomorrow would be the game. If not, have to come back and play tonight at 7 o'clock, right?
Oh, no. There is a bye.
Oh, there's a bye.
There.
Yep. Looky there. Sure is. So you'd be down to 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah, 1 o'clock or one game, regardless of what happens, there is a bye in that loser's bracket area. So, yeah, it'd be 10 o'clock if we were to lose. Possible opponents in that one. Well, looking ahead, possible opponents if we win is Okemah and Oilton. I saw a little bit of Oilton yesterday against Burns Flat. I got some friends on the Burns Flat team. We wanted to watch them a little bit. And let's see here. Loser to Oilton, Okemah, Tallahena. Those are the possible opponents for tomorrow.
Yeah,
regardless of what happens today. Another team to watch. I was able to catch Moreland. Uh-huh. If you know anything about Moreland, if anybody knows anything about Moreland, the first thing that comes to mind are the DeWalt twins, DeWalt board. Those are the guys who could play some base. They could play here for every sport. Well, I believe that one of those guys is a coach and has a girl on that team, and they are solid. They're real solid. I saw them play Tallahena. They had to come from behind to win that game, and once they got rolling, they could put up some runs. Real fun bunch to watch there. And that's a game I kind of want to check out. Hopefully I can get there in time. We will. Moreland and Cheyenne, because we're very familiar with Cheyenne. Saw them in the league championship game. They're solid. So this is this has a potential to be a really good game at 11:30 on that top bracket.
Yeah, that's right. Moreland beat Tallahena 13-10. And so they get Cheyenne at 11:30 right before you guys play. Cool. You mentioned Oilton. Shout out Burns Flat Deal City. 13-0. So Burns Flat Deal City falls into the loser's bracket, and they will actually play the loser of Moreland and Cheyenne at 5:30 coming up today. On the other side, the blue bracket at Stroud in the 8U tournament, Navajo gets Blanchard. Blanchard beat Little Axe 14-7. So Navajo and Blanchard is going to go off at 10 o'clock this morning, and then Weatherford gets started against the host Stroud. Stroud beat Purcell 4-2, so Weatherford and Stroud is at 2:30 this afternoon. So that wraps up 8U, 10U tournament over in Weatherford. You had Elmore City knocking off Cordell 9-8. Stratford beat Canute 9-4. So today it's Canute and Cordell at 4:30 in an elimination game. Weatherford and Moreland get started. Their tournament started at 2:45. This afternoon. That's 10U at Weatherford in the blue bracket. In the red bracket, Burns Flat Deal City shut out Washington Harding 7-0. Burns Flat Deal City will play Sealing today at 1 o'clock. Elk City Elkettes beat Oilton 10-1. And so the Elkettes draw Hobart at 6:15 tonight as Hobart blanked Henrietta 18-0. So Elk City and Hobart at 6:15. Burns Flat Deal City and Sealing at 1. And then a game that was already on the book, Cheyenne Raiden plays Lexington at 2:45. That's 10U in Weatherford. Also, the 12U tournament is in Ada, the blue bracket. Sealing and McAllister are playing about 15 minutes from now in their first games. Washington beat Preston 11-6, and they'll play Clinton at 11:15. Fort Cobb, Roxton, and Chandler will go at 1 o'clock. Then in the red bracket in Ada, down in the 12U tournament, Okemah shut out Latta 5-0. They draw Canute at 9:30, so Okemah and Canute at 9:30 there. Cordell blanked Noble 1-0. Cordell and Leedy will go at 11:15. Then Arapaho shut out Oilton 12-0. They're already into the next round, so Arapaho awaits that Okemah-Canute winner. That game will go off at 6:15 tonight. So that is three different locations, three different age groups, six brackets all together. Western Oklahoma well represented in the OK Kids State Softball Tournament. And, of course, Jared, you guys in Stroud patiently awaiting game this afternoon at 1 o'clock against Wynnewood.
Patiently awaiting, that's right. I don't know how much sleep I got last night. How much could you in a hotel? No offense to hotels, but you know how it is. When you're not in your own bed, you toss and turn. But I think the big reason was is the nerves and the anxiety. And mainly, again, a lot of people can relate. A lot of that is just being a parent. You know, it's not so much just me helping out this team. It's just me being a parent, just ready to get my kid out there and these other kids. Just have fun. That's my. I don't want these kids. If all these kids, all of them, 12U all the way down to 8U, it seems like it's serious business. Sometimes you get out these ball fields with the screaming and hooting and hollering and everything. At the end of the day, we just hope these kids have fun. And that's. I don't want to add any more pressure to these kids. We hope we're out here having a lot of fun. And it is a lot of fun. This is what the summer's about, right? Baseball, softball tournaments. It's a lot of fun. So. Hopefully we can continue that today going into the weekend.
Yeah, speaking of baseball, the Sooners know their opponent now up in Omaha for the three-game championship series starting tomorrow night at 6. It's Oklahoma versus Ole Miss. The Rebels came back after losing the first game against Arkansas on, what was that, Wednesday, 3-2. They blanked the Hogs 2-0. Yesterday, so it's OU versus Ole Miss, three-game series starting tomorrow at 6 o'clock. You know, Ole Miss, these two teams are so eerily kind of similar in a lot of ways, and those ways are they got off to not the greatest start or had a lull at some point in their season, I should say. Ole Miss was all the way up to number one at one point early on. Then in the SEC, they struggled. Barely got into the tournament. I mean, it was the selection committee said they were the last at-large bid into the tournament. And now all of a sudden here they are in the championship series. And, of course, we've documented OU's run since that Bedlam series. They won the last five Big 12 series, won the Big 12 tournament, went on the road to beat Florida in the regional, beat Virginia Tech in the Supers. And they're now the only team that's unbeaten in Omaha after Ole Miss suffered that loss. So kind of a battle of Cinderellas, as it were, here in the championship series, one of which is a true Cinderella that nobody really thought would be here. The other created the Cinderella story for themselves by not playing very good in the SEC.
Yeah, I always forget about where Ole Miss started at the year and the high expectations. And of course, once the year got going, it was Tennessee. It felt like it was Tennessee. The talk was Tennessee and everybody else. And so there is that that you have to consider about Ole Miss is they're not sneaking their way in as a, what you call themselves a Cinderella. They very capable, but OU just seems like this team of destiny. Just talking to, you know, other OU fans, let's just call it what it is. And it was like before yesterday's game, I'm just kind of gauging the interest, because I know who I wanted, and I was like, well, who do we want? Do we want Arkansas to win this, or do we want Ole Miss? Who do we want? And the common answer I got was, it doesn't matter, because this is a team that does what OU is. It doesn't matter. They're sitting in the catbird seat. They're going to have fresh arms. They're rested. Me personally, I wanted Ole Miss because Arkansas, I thought, scared me with how they can get on a roll with their bats. So we'll see. I mean, but there's still that fact that Ole Miss was considered one of the top teams in the nation to start the year, and now here they are trying to live up to those expectations. So it's going to be very interesting for me. I don't know if this is going to be as easy as some might think for OU, and Vegas thinks Ole Miss is the team to beat, as they have in the favorites. So they're early on favorites. I don't know if that's changed since I woke up this morning.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, if we had this conversation in March, I think one of these teams would have came up in the conversation and the other one wouldn't have. To your point about Ole Miss, they made themselves Cinderella. It's not that they don't that they are necessarily. They just didn't play very well in the SEC. And it's a team that's loaded with talent, obviously. If you're able to get to the number one spot in the country at one point during the season, You clearly are loaded with talent, right? It's just that things didn't go well for them in the SEC regular season schedule, and you know they're right there at just think the razor's edge of this not even being possible because they grabbed the last at-large spot. You know, what if that went to somebody else and then the team that's playing for the title isn't even in the race?
Right. That's crazy to think of. Or do.
I mean, it is literally
sorry,
like
I don't know if you heard that. My computer is making noises.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's crazy to think of them being right there on the cusp of their season ending before this postseason even began. And this is a discussion we could have on another day, but, you know, do we like tournament formats? Some people knock it because, like, well, it's only the hottest team that's winning. It's not the best team. Right now, Ole Miss and Oklahoma are the hottest teams. It's not a true indicator of how the season went. I don't think that matters. I love the tournament situation. It gives everybody a lot of teams the chance to continue their season and end it on a high mark. It is absolutely insane that they were right there on the bubble, if you will, and that was almost ready to pop.
Yeah, it's literally like a team being in the play-in games in the NCAA basketball tournament and going all the way to the final game.
Absolutely.
To make the comparison. And to the, you know, what else are you going to do? You don't have time to have all these three game series. I mean, what the tournament format is the only way that you can get it completed in a timely fashion. You know, that's just going to be the way it's the way it is and the way it's always going to have to be. I think the three game series came about to try to alleviate some of that maybe. But there's just nothing else you can do other than what's happening. And that's just one of the perks of getting hot at the right time, I guess. You know, everybody else in the country had the chance to get hot at the right time, quote unquote, too. It just happens that it's these two teams that are there. And it ought to be fun. It ought to be a really fun series.
And back to your point with the three-game series, I like it because it pits the entire team against the entire team, meaning the bullpen and different starters. You know, you almost want the third game so you can see, you know, does that make sense? Other than just one guy versus one guy.
Well, yeah. How many times in the past did you get to a situation where, you know, one team is undefeated, the other team has a loss, and once they kind of eliminated that if game back in, I don't know, late 80s maybe, to where then, you know, one team went through undefeated, another team had a loss but got back and only had to beat them once. So then what was the advantage to win in all your games at that point? Because you didn't have one. It was still just a one-game, a one-off for the title. That changes this a little bit. It doesn't necessarily give the team that's undefeated an advantage per se, but what it does is gives them the advantage of getting an extra day's rest and also being able to line up their pitching staff exactly how they want to. In the event that it works through there like OU did. So, you know, there are some built-in advantages to winning every game as opposed to losing one and having to play that game like Ole Miss did on Thursday. But it's not like you start out 1-0. You know, you still have to win two games. They still have to win two games. But you do have a little bit of a built-in advantage just because of being able to set your staff exactly the way you want to.
Right. I'm anxious off today and we'll get going tomorrow. What is that? 2 o'clock tomorrow?
No, it's 6 o'clock tomorrow, 2 o'clock on Sunday.
I'm sorry. My days are turned around.
Yep.
Yes.
All right.
And if things are going good our end, I won't get to watch India.
Exactly. NBA draft last night. One of the most anticipated drafts since the Thunder have been in Oklahoma City with the 2 pick. What we all thought for the last, ever since the lottery. It felt like that night, the lottery night, it was kind of rounding into form that Jabari Smith was going to go down to Orlando. Then it was Holmgren. Then it was Banchero. While we were on the show yesterday, Adrian Wojnarowski even sent out a tweet that said things were firming up at the top with those three in that order. But we discussed the Vegas odds and how they kind of moved and then reset and then moved and then reset with all of a sudden Paolo Banchero being a guy that was in play for that number one pick. And actually, when I was as I was taking Wyatt to baseball practice as the draft was starting, listening to the guys, Al and Gideon and Matt, they started talking about some different betting places that closed with Bancaro a minus 5,000 favorite to be the number one pick. So at that point, you kind of had an idea that somebody knew something and was putting some money on it. And then sure enough, kind of out of nowhere, at least kind of out of nowhere before yesterday morning and some different betting markets, Paolo Bancaro is the number one pick going down to Orlando. Seems either a heck of a smokescreen by Orlando, or do you think that they really were kind of back and forth and hadn't made their decision until sometime overnight, you know, yesterday or the day before?
Because of the history of Orlando, you know, we kind of talk about teams that just are not good at drafting and front office is a mess sometimes, and they just never can get out of their own way. So I'm not, this might be a reach, but did they just kind of stumble into a good pick because they did not know what to do? You know what I mean? Like, well, they're back and forth, and then they just kind of last minute, or I guess in this case, last couple of days, think, you know what? I think Bancaro's the guy we want. And they talked themselves into a good pick. I like the pick. I think that's clear. I like the pick. I don't think they could have gone wrong either way, but I don't know if they just kind of fell backwards into this pick, and now they're looking like geniuses doing it.
Yeah, it's interesting because after the pick was made, I started seeing some chatter online that Orlando never worked him out, never even talked to him. And I thought, what in the world?
That goes again to what I'm saying. Did they just kind of fall backwards into this?
But
or the last minute shakeup? Like, you know what? Yeah, we need this guy more than this guy.
I don't know because it, but it also kind of speaks to the narrative that has been out there that he is by far the safest pick.
Yeah.
And so maybe they kind of – I know there's reporting that Chet wouldn't give him his medicals, and it doesn't sound like he was really even in the mix for the number one pick as they got into it. But maybe there
was – I don't think Chet wanted to be the number one pick.
No, I don't think – not because Orlando. It was Orlando. I think you're exactly right. I think he's exactly where he wanted to be in Oklahoma City. But it's just really strange – to see a report like that for the number one over. I mean, it's not like, you know, down at number 25 and you go, oh, our guy got taken. All right, we'll take this guy that we never really, you know, we watched play but never really did much due diligence on because it's just the 25th pick. This is the number one overall pick. And so maybe they had it in their mind the entire time that they liked him the best after watching him play and scouting him throughout a year, or even before that probably. And they were trying to find a reason not to take him and couldn't find that with Jabari Smith. But I think it just speaks to the fact that most people think he is the safest guy out there and that he is going to be a guy that maybe he doesn't have the highest upside, but maybe he gets to whatever his ceiling is, which then in turn still makes him the best player in this draft moving forward.
Yeah, it's. I think that the key word there is safe. And that's something Orlando hasn't done in quite a while. I think they're just – it was just a safe pick overall.
Their history of drafting number one is impeccable. That's another thing that, you know, for the franchise, when you look at Shaq, when you look at Chris Webber, which turned into Penny on the trade, Dwight Howard, sure. You know, those guys are – you know, those guys were fantastic. Now, obviously, it's different guys drafting back then, but – you know, that's another thing that maybe goes into their favor of, you know, being able to take the guy that you know is going to play and play well in the NBA versus some of the or at least the other two that maybe you felt like had chances not to reach their ceiling.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. I might have been too harsh about Orlando and their drafting, but you're right. Those were different guys, and that was a different time back then.
Yeah, just at number one. I mean, you're probably
right. Yeah, number one.
You're probably right elsewhere, but yeah, number one. They've been pretty awesome. All right.
No, they did draft Victor Oladipo, right?
Yeah, but he wasn't number one.
No, I know, but yeah. I mean, like overall.
He was actually number two, and he was one of the number two picks that we talked about yesterday that actually made an All-Star game. Over the last 25 years. So, was definitely.
So I might have been too harsh on Orlando, but they can't keep them there. Or they traded them, obviously, to Oklahoma City. And and he's just as athletic as they can get at the time. And I was so excited when that happened. But yeah, we'll see what Orlando can do with Vancaro. See where this goes.
The debate that will rage on for years and years and years and years right here in Oklahoma City will be Chet versus Jabari. You know, when we got wind of what was happening out in Vegas with the betting markets yesterday morning, I still didn't really believe that Jabari Smith wasn't going to be the number one overall pick. But we did discuss, you know, what happens. We both agreed that that Presti would stay with Chet Holmgren because it felt like that was his guy, and sure enough, he essentially said that. And so, at least in Sam Presti's mind and in Oklahoma City's war room, unless they had Vancaro above Holmgren, with them taking Chet number two, tells you that at worst, Holmgren was number two on their board, and I'm going to suspect that Chet Holmgren was always the number one pick in the mind of Sam Presti.
That's where I was going with yesterday. I felt like there's a plan and a process to this, and it didn't matter who's going to be taking number one. Chet Holmgren was going to Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
And I think Chet Holmgren knew that. Everybody in the Thunder camp knew that this was going to happen and moving on. I mean, I think the real action came later in the draft, as we're about to talk about.
So, I guess, is it the right choice? It remains to be seen, obviously. There's not a definitive answer right now. But I guess what I'm asking you to do is defend that choice.
I defend it with the stats that I brought up before with the potential of him being a starter and an all-star, maybe make an all-NBA team at a few points in his career. I think the upside is more likely to happen than the downside. I think because they saw what he can do in college. We've seen it. You saw it. You fell in love with it, as did I. I think we fell in love with it, Aaron, because we saw that what he could add on to that when he gets to the next level. So I like to pick, you know, Sam likes a project. I'm not calling Chet Holmgren a project, but I don't think we're getting a guy who's going to give us two or three good years. I think this could be a guy that could be like a Kevin Durant in the sense of being in Oklahoma City for as long as Kevin Durant was and having an impact. And I think Chet Holmgren can be that guy.
I 100% agree. If you're going to get the number two pick, in my mind, you have to swing for the fences.
Yes.
And I think when you look at what the ceilings can be, is Chet Holmgren has a higher ceiling than anybody else just because he's different than the rest. He's the only one that's 7 foot and can shoot threes. The way that he can possibly dominate on the defensive end, averaging 3.7 blocks per game, is something that the other two guys don't necessarily have. Now, the problem or the weird thing about him is I think he has the highest ceiling, but I definitely also think he has the lowest floor. And so if there's any of those three guys that might be not a complete bust, but certainly not worthy of the pick of where they were picked in the draft, I don't think it's any doubt that he is the answer to that question also. So if you call that risky, that's fine. But for me, when you have the opportunity at the top of the draft to strike gold, you have to swing at that. And I think that's what happened with this pick. I think that another thing that ought to make Thunder fans feel good about it is how many times has Presti picked in the top five? Every time he's hit. And oh, by the way, in two of those three, people came out of the draft going, what's he doing? Why did he pick that guy? Why did he take Westbrook at four? Nobody's taking Westbrook at four. Why did he take Harden at three? That's way too high. You know what I'm just there was nitpicking at those selections, and it turned out that it was not warranted. We'll see what happens, but it's for the first time in a couple of years, and maybe quite honestly, for the first time since that 2016 season with Durant still here, it does feel like there's a different type of excitement. And it's not a, hey, we're going to win the title type of excitement. It's a, what do we have here excitement? What can this team be? And I think they'll start out definitely trying to win. And it's a different feel than even when it was drafting Giddey the year before, because this guy is a top tier talent moving in out of the draft with a chance to be a super duper star in the NBA.
Yeah, back to your point, I'm not hearing a lot of rumblings of, especially after Vancouver went one. I'm not hearing a lot. There will be debate years down the road when we start seeing results, but you're not hearing the why. What is he doing? Talk, like you mentioned. I think the trust is there, and that was the theme I saw a lot on Twitter. Is in Sam we trust. I think he's won the trust over with Thunder Nation, and they trust that. We trust what Sam is doing, and especially with the picks later in the draft and in the back-to-back at 11 and 12 and the confusion of the Jalen Williams, that's going to be fun. I trust that he's building something that's going to give us hope moving forward and not to, and that's the next question, Aaron, is the tanking done?
I think
or
so.
Or will we know that? Or will it take 20 games to figure that out?
I think the original idea for the team next year is not to just flat out tank.
Agreed.
Yeah, that was your... I was just reading a text. Okay. I have a feeling Holmgren's going to be a bust. I guess I would ask why. Just a gut feeling. Is there anything you saw from him outside of reminding everybody of Poku and stature and color? What is the reasoning behind thinking he's going to be a bust? Is it just you have a feeling, or is it do you have a reason? You know what I'm saying? Because the guy, when you look at his progression, he's been and proven to be one of, if not the best guy at every level he's played at. Right now, I'm not telling you he's going to be the best player in the NBA, but he's constantly answered the questions that were before him. And maybe it's just because he was 7 foot tall. And now when he gets amongst other 7 foot tall guys, then, things could be a little bit different. But when you look at his skill set and you look at what he can do and what he can be, it's obvious why that draft pick was made. And if you start comparing, if you want to compare skill sets with Jabari Brown, excuse me, go ahead, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that Chet Holmgren can do that maybe at a higher level that maybe Jabari Smith can't. And the one thing that Smith is a great shooter, Holmgren only shot 3% points less from three than Jabari did. So, this is definitely going to be a debate, and it's going to be easy pickings. Down the line, no matter what you say today, it's going to be easy pickings to go, I told you Jabari Smith is going to be better. Get on board right now, because I'm not going to listen to it. It's a lot of the same of OU fans that couldn't wait for Brent Venables to leave and Mike Stoops to jump in that 4 years later going, I knew it. Venables was better. No, you didn't. It's not what you were saying then. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's fine to have that opinion. No, Jabari Smith, that's the thing. When you start talking about these guys, like comparing, it almost feels like you have to run, like you're running somebody down to talk about the other one in a favorable light. They're both, I think actually all three of these guys are going to be really good NBA players. But the idea is to pick the one that's going to be the best. And if you look at their skill sets and their stature and what they bring to the game, I think Presti swung for the grand slam instead of settling for the double, which at number two, that's what I would do every single time.
Agreed. Absolutely. When you get those top five picks, you have to. You have to. And can't play the what if game too. And you don't want to draft a Smith and then Holmgren turns into what some think could be the next Kevin Durant, and then we're going here going, what if? What if we had done what we originally were supposed to do? So I applaud the pick. I'm happy with it. And again, and Sam, I trust.
Yeah, especially at the top of the draft. All right, let's go down a little bit further. The confusion reigned last night after the Knicks picked, Jang. Asamoah. Anyway, French
help me,
guy.
Help me with the name. Yeah,
the French guy that went to that played in New Zealand as an 18-year-old. And then you figure out that there's a trade made, and then you're like, wait a minute. So the Thunder traded the 12 for the 11? What? And then you realize, wait, nope. They drafted them both. So they end up with Jang, who shot 27% from three at 6'10", 18-year-old down in New Zealand in that league. It's actually the same league that Josh Giddey came from. And then right after that, they draft Jalen Williams, and I was like, that's too high. And then I realized, oh, he's from Santa Clara. It's that guy.
He flew up
draft boards toward the end. He's got, like I said, Santa Clara, 53% shooting overall. He shot 40 from three, 81 from the free throw stripe. I think you're looking at guys that were picked where they were picked for two totally different things. One with Jang is the potential. Whereas Williams is more of a, maybe he's more NBA ready right now to come in and make an impact on this team.
Yeah. Do you think the Thunder gave up too much to get to the 11? Has there been any talk? I haven't seen any talk.
Oh,
of that.
Yeah. There's been tons of talk of that. Yeah, okay. Tons.
Was it a lot? Was one of those things that we knew was going to happen because of all the picks that the Thunder had?
I think
at their disposal.
I think it was always going to happen because of the picks that they have at their disposal. Good point on the text line here about, you know, the bust nature of Chet is more physical because of his size. You know,
sure.
Think Bill Walton.
Yeah, you got to watch out for injury and all that.
That's right. Yeah, and that's valid. But if you're going to sit around and draft thinking about injuries, then you don't need to be drafted at all.
Yeah.
You know that If you see something in a medical evaluation heading into it and you ignore it, that's one thing. If something just happens to happen, that's totally a different one in my mind. But I do understand that concern, no doubt about it, because you see big skinny guys have foot problems down the line. There's no doubt.
Even Durant had it.
Yeah, Durant.
What was that injury? They broke that bone in his foot.
Yeah.
That lingered.
Jones, was his the Jones fracture?
Jones fracture, yeah. That's it.
With Jalen Williams from Santa Clara, like I said, he's 6'6", more of a maybe NBA-ready type guy right now, more than Jang's going to be. With, you know, 40% shooter from three in college, that's pretty decent. And so, you know, I think you try to address the shooting that way. And then with the other Jalen Williams, I mean, when you watched him play at Arkansas, I think we even referenced it after they beat Gonzaga. Like, man, that's a guy that reminds you of a guy that, like, a Thunder type guy. Just the unselfishness and the way that he played hard and did all kinds of things. You look at his splits last year. He averaged 11, grabbed 10 rebounds, had 3 assists, blocked a shot, stole a ball every single game. He only shot 46% from the field and only 24% from three, so that's not very good, obviously. But I don't think that the role that they have envisioned for him is just to come in and be, you know, a 3-and-D guy. I think he's more of the Swiss Army knife type of guy that can guard multiple, if not all, positions on the floor, and that's probably the intriguing thing for taking Jalen Williams from Arkansas with that pick in the second round.
Yeah. You liked him, right? You were the guy. Yeah, you just said that. You liked the Williams from Arkansas. I remember you raving about him.
Yeah, for sure.
He's not
ever going to be a guy that's going to make an all-NBA team or an all-star team or anything like that. But he's also one of those guys that you see every good team has. And that's just, you know, a P.J. Tucker type guy. Hopefully he can develop into a guy that could shoot like that. But that's the type of guy I have him envisioned as, just a kind of a junkyard dog that will do anything he's asked to do, do everything he's asked to do, and do it at a decently high level outside of maybe being able to score the ball. I mean, if you draft another Andre Roberson with the 34th pick in the second round, are you going to be mad about that? I don't think so.
No, not at all. Here's a stat I just found about him. He led led in charges taken last year in college with 54. He took 54 charges all season long.
Unselfish. Will do anything and everything he's asked to do.
And that's a team stat right there. I mean, I know it's marked on him as an individual stat, but he's doing that for your team.
No doubt about
it. I like that stat.
And that fits into what the culture that's been built in Oklahoma City. Guys willing to do that type of thing. Who else do you think did well outside of the Thunder? I know you said you went back and looked at the Thunder draft. I'll give you one. I thought what Detroit did was pretty good.
You took my answer.
With Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren, that looks like a really solid draft for them to put around Cade Cunningham Bay. I can't remember. Sadiq Bey. That looks really solid up there, or what they're trying to build in Detroit.
Yeah, it's a great pairing, I think, with Cunningham, like you mentioned. We'll see what Detroit can do with it and see if they can take the next step forward. But that was the consensus when you start looking at draft grades and who won the draft, who lost the draft, kind of the wrap up of the first two rounds here. And everyone pointed at Detroit being that team. And I agree. Because we love Jaden Ivey. We that was a guy we kind of salivated over, hoping that if we can get back into the top five, that would be a guy that the Thunder would target. And that's what Detroit did exactly. They got the guy that I think is going to help out, and it's going to complement Cunningham and help out Detroit and maybe get out of the cellar for the first time in a long time.
I got to tell you, when I saw that Shaedon Sharpe went 7 to Portland, I thought to myself, it's happening. The Thunder are about to trade the 12 and Lu Dort for Shaedon Sharpe. It did not happen. But I got excited when I saw that pick. And it turned out, if you weren't listening earlier, Matt Pinto, they asked him to write down on a napkin what he thought, the two players he thought Oklahoma City would end up with. And those were the two, Holmgren and Shaedon Sharpe. So I like that for Portland. He's just intriguing, probably because you didn't get to see him this year, but he was supposed to be going to Kentucky next year, like this coming season. And I think if he would have, been in the conversation with Scoot Henderson as the number two pick behind Wembanyama coming over from France. So I like that as well. Question on the text line asks us, how would y'all grade this Thunder draft class? I think it's A+ if Chet turns out. I think it's going to start out at a B+ because of a little bit of those bus concerns. And then also with the other guys, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the roster and how they're able to incorporate four picks with what they already had. I mean, if there's one thing it created last night by picking all these guys, it's going to be competition. Competitions for spots. There's a lot of guys that are going to be competing for those spots. So you know what? I'm going to give it. I'll go back to A because I love Holmgren, and that would be copping out if I didn't stay at an A because I think Holmgren's going to be awesome, and I think he's exactly the perfect complement to what was already there with the cornerstones in Giddey and SGA. So that'd almost be a little bit of a cop out because I do believe in Chet Holmgren. And I think he was the perfect pick for the Thunder.
So solid A.
Yep.
Right. Okay. I go A-.
Because quite frankly, nobody cares. Even if 11, 12, and 34 are terrible, if Chet turns out to be a superstar, you get an A, right? I mean, that's the whole nature of the NBA. It's not quite like grading an NFL draft class where you got to start looking down the list for value and all that. All you need is one of these guys to be great, and you hit a home run.
Right. And the whole idea of this is when you walk away from it is, did we get better? I don't think there's any question of that. I think that no one's walking away from this saying, well, we're the same or we got worse. I think absolutely the Thunder got better. My only knock on this, I love Chet. I'm with you on that. I think the upside is there. And I think it's going to be – it's exciting to see what can happen with that. And the guys below him, I'm very happy with too. I think the only knock is what we talked about earlier, did Sam give up too much to get to 11? But I think we kind of knew that was coming, that was inevitable anyways. And I don't think that, but that doesn't reflect this draft, because that could reflect later drafts.
Okay.
So that's why.
Here's what he gave up. Yeah. And here's what he gave up.
Go ahead.
All three are 2023 picks. So next year picks. The Washington pick, and none of these are the Thunder's pick, by the way. These are just picks that have been acquired. So Washington is top 14 protected. Denver, top 14 protected. Detroit, top 18 protected. So it's not like he gave up three lottery picks. He gave up zero lottery picks. Because those picks don't – you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
There's tons of protections on those picks that were headed to New York. So that's another thing to think about. So yesterday, Jared, I think we knew this commitment at some point was coming before July 4th, but it kind of popped up just out of nowhere. And that commitment is Arch – Manning to Texas. He had a final three of Texas, Georgia, and Alabama. And instead of staying with the SEC roots of his grandpa and uncles, he goes to Texas, which eventually probably will be SEC roots while he's there. But so Arch to Texas, what are your thoughts?
Arch to the arch rivals. The headlines write themselves. A little shocking. When you consider the top three, you'd think Texas would be the bottom of that. But, you know, kudos to Sarkisian for going out and getting this guy. And, you know, other recruits will follow. That was the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, now you're going to see other guys commit because they want to play with this guy. But then, you know, the rumbles are, you know, what you already had Ewers there. This is, you know, iron sharpens iron situation. Or does it? Does Ewers say, I came here to be a starter. Now you brought this guy in and he's threatening to take my spot. Was Arch Manning promised a starting spot as soon as he got there? I mean, there's a lot of questions going to happen in that quarterback room. But, I mean, whoever's going to get him was going to get upgraded. And Texas got that upgrade. It's a story we're going to continue to follow with his career. He has a lot of pressure on him to live up to that Manning name. And maybe he chose Texas because he's like, you know what? You know, but everybody, Manning's and SEC go hand in hand. I want to blaze my own path, so I'm going to go to Texas. But you're right. I mean, eventually it's going to be SEC anyway. So, yeah, but it was a little interesting to me for him to pick Texas because of the other two they're going up against. So it's going to be interesting.
I actually see
if he can live up to it, to his hype.
Yeah, no chance. And he could be very, very, very good, and there's no chance he's living up to that hype.
It has a Chris Sims feel to it.
That's what I wrote down on our little list here. Is this Chris Sims 2.0? And here's the thing about Chris Sims. People don't realize how good he was at Texas. He just wasn't very good on one day in October.
No.
You know, he was actually a fantastic player down there for 9 out of 10, or I guess back then 10 out of 11 weeks. He just wasn't good against OU, and that was
see,
right.
The only time OU fans would watch Texas was when it was OU Texas, bro. I know I'm like that. I wasn't watching Texas play Kansas State on a Saturday afternoon after an OU game or you know, I wasn't doing that.
Well,
but you're right. Chris Sims he was a good quarterback. It's just the only time we saw this when it was against OU, and man, did OU love the pick on him.
Well, and it was back then. It was harder to find.
Yeah, that too.
You know, every single game wasn't on TV every single week. It's got that feel to it. Now, back to the Ewers thing. I don't see what that matters, because if Ewers is as good as everybody thinks he's going to be, those two are only going to be on campus for 1 year together. You know, he's already a year in. Ewers is clearly going to be the starter without Arch there this year, and then Arch comes in next year. And is the backup for 1 year of Ewers. I don't see what it's almost like they've got it set up in the pipeline a little bit like Lincoln Riley did at Oklahoma, where it was kind of an every other year thing. And if the older guy was as good as advertised, none of this would ever matter. What's going to be the problem, Jared, is if Ewers isn't quite as good or doesn't start the 2023 season out positively, a la what we saw at Oklahoma this year with Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams. that's where the problems could start to arise.
Yeah, we could see a similar situation. Would the Texas fans start chanting, "We want Arch, we want Arch"? That would be so funny if that happened.
Okay, so we're not making fun, but we're definitely finding the half glass empty part of this. What if it's not? Because it's been a long, long time since Texas had had two guys like this at that position on campus together. I think you got to go all the way back to Vince and Colt to find a time. And nobody realized that Colt McCoy was Colt McCoy when Vince was still there roaming the sidelines in Austin. So that's one thing. You don't blame Texas fans whatsoever for being excited because, quite frankly, they haven't seen this at the quarterback spot in over a decade and getting closer to two.
Yeah, I'm with you. You can't blame them for being excited about it. You know, and we're OU fans, so we're looking for the cracks in this. But it's exciting to, I mean, as a football fan, to hopefully see Texas maybe get back into what Texas was. I mean, let's be honest. Just like USC, we don't like the situation. But when USC is good, when Texas is good, when Oklahoma is good, the sport is better for it. So we hope this is a step in that direction, and we'll see what happens. You know, and another thing, you know, back to Sarkisian, kudos to him for getting this guy on campus. But if it doesn't work out, I mean, what happens to him?
Yeah,
you know,
that's,
it's like, man, he just can't get it. You know, he's getting these guys on campus and he can't get it done. But that's years down the road.
Yeah, that was my last question on it. Will Sarkisian still be the coach at Texas whenever Arch Manning's last year on the 40 acres is?
Or vice versa. Will Arch Manning even be there the whole time with the way the transfer portal is just so fluid nowadays?
Well, and let me ask you this.
You know what I mean? I mean, what if he's a couple years in, it's like, this isn't – I don't fit here. I'm going to go to Ole Miss.
Yeah, well, that's,
I'm gonna, you know.
That's always a possibility, but I think it's more intriguing on the other side because if you're Texas right now, if you're the administration down there, and say this year doesn't go as good as you think it's going to, next year is a little bit of a flop as well, do you feel the pressure to hang on to Sarkisian longer than you want to because he has Arch Manning coming in or is there on campus right now? Is that transfer portal not the, hey, I don't fit here if you're Arch, the, are you going to really fire my coach? Well, if you do that, I'm leaving.
That's a good point. That's a good point. This spot, maybe Sarkisian a few more years.
Maybe it did.
Despite what happens on the field. Because whatever happens on the field this year, everybody can lean on the fact that, well, Arch is coming. Hold on, guys. Arch is coming. So let's keep – and Sark got him here. If we fire Sark, Arch might not come.
Yeah, not, so might not come or
take solace in that.
Or leave, yeah. And if things don't go well, how much does that even set them back further? Because they're letting – one recruit at quarterback because of his last name make decisions either like involved or because of the fear of losing him, then how much further does that set them back with the SEC move by not getting rid of a guy that's clearly not up to the task because you're scared to death of losing a player?
Yeah, a lot of questions. Again, it's just – as a fan of college football, I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Like for us here in this state, he couldn't have gone to a better place because it's going to be a lot of fun to figure out, okay, how good is this guy really? And you know what? If he is really, really good, it's going to be easy to dislike him as Big 12 and then later on SEC fans. All right, Jared, we're going to have to wrap it up. Good luck to everybody out in the state softball tournaments, you guys included. 1 o'clock against Wynnewood. I can't wait for your wrap-up on Sunday.
All right.
All right, man. Have a good weekend.
See
you. You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cow. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is... blistered to right. Way